Well, hello there, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for 2-for-1 at the Movies on whatsupwestman.ca and CJ106, Assiniboine Community College Radio. I'm Sean Cameron, and I'm joined, as always, by my fearless co-host, Stephen Jackson, who is in Brandon this week for the show, so we're trying something new and coming to you from the same time zone. This week, we look at the movie Mirror, Mirror, now playing in theaters. Julia Roberts is the clear-cut star of this movie, and we look at the good, bad, and ugly this fantasy pick has to offer, as well as some local theater happenings. So sit back, relax, get the popcorn as we bring you Mirror, Mirror at the Movies, and so much more.
Once upon a time, in an enchanted kingdom, there was a beautiful princess. With skin as white as snow and hair as black as night.
Blah, blah, blah.
Her hair is not black, it's raven, and she's 18 years old, and her skin has never seen the sun, so of course it's good.
This spring.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. Who's the fairest of them all?
Snow White.
What?
What?
Snow White.
Ugh.
A classic tale.
Do you want to hear it?
Gets a new wrinkle.
They're not wrinkles. They're just crinkles.
Banish her to the woods.
Is it done?
Just as you instructed.
I'm impressed. You're not as pathetic and wimpy as I have always believed.
That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
You're invited to discover.
The prince is rich. I'm going to marry him, and then my financial problems will be solved.
An untold adventure.
Organize a ball. We are going to sweep this kid off his feet.
Of romance.
I think Snow White is the most beautiful woman in the whole world.
Agree to disagree.
Mystery.
Who are you?
Snow White.
Snow who?
Snow Way!
Power.
This doesn't fit.
Well, you must have shrunk it, cinch me up. I knew I was the same size.
And magic.
I'll use the love potion.
Puppy love. What am I supposed to do with a puppy?
You can rub my tummy.
Fetch!
Queen is getting married.
Take back your kingdom.
I read so many stories where the prince saves the princess. It's time we change that ending.
You're with the bandits?
You're with the queen.
Should we help her?
She's doing pretty good on her own.
If you weren't trying to stab me right now, I'd be tempted to kiss you.
The bandits' leader is a she.
Bandits' leader is Snow White.
Who feels like crashing a wedding?
And here I was having such a good day. Everyone has magic within them.
Yes.
I definitely have a happily ever after thing going on.
Mirror, mirror.
Anyone know how to break a spell?
Say hello to my little friend.
Yeah! Experience the untold adventures of Snow White.
Okay, I'm joined once again on whatsupwestman.ca, 2-for-1 at the Movies, and I am joined, as always, by Stephen Jackson of Toronto, Ontario. Just want to take a moment, Stephen, and say hello to everyone once again.
Yeah, well, hello, everyone. Stephen Jackson here, and much different episode, I guess, because I guess we're completely live. We're actually in the same place for once this time.
We are in the same building, in the same city, in the same province right now, and we thought we'd take a moment to take a look at the movie Mirror, Mirror. As you've heard in the opening there, Mirror, Mirror has been playing at the Empire Theaters here in Brandon, and we're going to take a moment and look at some of the positives, negatives, and otherwise when it comes to this film. First of all, just want to make a mention, as always, CJ106.5, thank you so much for allowing us to be on the air. It's very exciting for the two of us to be able to say, hey, we're on the radio somewhere.
Exactly, exactly. It's great to actually have a great venue to showcase this show and everything. So, yes.
Excellent. And as always, our podcasts are available on iTunes by searching whatsupwestman.ca, as well on our website, whatsupwestman.ca. 2-for-1 at the Movies. Once again, we are talking about Mirror, Mirror. I'm going to let Stephen take it away, give us a little bit of a synopsis of what Mirror, Mirror is all about.
Well, Mirror, Mirror tells the rather interesting tale of Snow White, told from the perspective of the evil queen. It's interesting, this movie is, it's lots of humor in this movie. It doesn't take itself very seriously, but there's some very interesting things going on in this movie.
Excellent. Well, we have a little bit of an intro there. So we're going to look at, obviously, characters in the movie. We're going to look a little bit at the writing. Going to look as well at some of the cinematography that's happening in this movie. It's really a very pretty movie, I guess you could say.
It's a very clean movie. Even, you know, even the peasants look pretty clean in this movie, actually. It is a very pretty movie. I think what's interesting is that they worked a lot to get a lot of the sets and the costumes to really work in this movie. Some are a little off the wall, like the dance party sequence where everyone's dressed up as their favorite animal or something. I'm not sure how to put that. But there's some very beautiful costumes. It's very visual. There's a lot of very neat special effects. One of my favorites was the water effect when the queen moves to her kind of outer layer out in the middle of this ocean lake thing, and she kind of pops out of the water, and it's actually quite interesting, actually.
Yeah, as you were mentioning their costumes a few minutes ago and kind of dance themes, I was a little bit taken aback or surprised, I guess you could say, and this is a bit of a spoiler, but the almost Bollywood-esque scene, you know, near the end of the movie there. I really didn't know what to make of that, and I couldn't wait to talk to Stephen about it because I watched and it just sort of threw me for a loop. What do you think they were going for?
Well, what this movie kind of reminded me of, I'm not sure if you remember, a few years ago, called a film called Ella Enchanted. It was kind of the first movie after The Princess Diaries that Anne Hathaway made. And I actually remember that there's actually a lot of musical sequences in it. And I remember this big dance sequence at the very end of the movie. But the difference was there actually was a fair amount of singing during the movie as well, too. There was actually kind of a little bit of a plot line around that. And they actually used, like, Queen music. But, yeah, this Bollywood sequence at the very end, it was just kind of like, whoa, where'd this thing come from? I mean, it was fun and all, but, you know, it was like it just didn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was coming from as well. And they do, giving it a bit of a way, they do tag that on to the end of the movie, and it just it sort of didn't fit, but like I say, that's not for my decision. That's for a director somewhere making a lot more money than, unfortunately, Stephen or I are making doing this podcast. Let's look a little bit maybe at some of the casting decisions that you figure sort of made the movie, or do you think they could have gone different directions with it?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Like this very much is Julia Roberts' movie. It's billed as her movie. It's definitely her movie. She has pretty much all the best lines in this movie. I enjoyed her. I found, like, you know, I've heard some thoughts that she seemed a little screechy through some of it and a little one note. But I think this is one of those movies where you actually see her kind of have some fun. And I think that's what I got out of it. Now, I know we had some other actors here, like Lily Collins, who is Phil Collins' daughter, and Armie Hammer, who, I mean, they're likable enough. They play the parts they have to. Lily Collins, actually, I thought was actually quite good in it. I actually enjoyed her and kind of some of the stuff they did with her. But, I mean, they're just kind of caricatures. They're not really in-depth characters, especially Armie Hammer's character, I didn't think so.
As we were driving over here to record this podcast, we were talking a little bit about this film, and it was funny to actually be in the same vehicle going somewhere talking about the show we're about to do as opposed to across thousands of miles doing it. But I noticed, especially with Armie Hammer's character, and I had mentioned to Stephen that I really thought if you closed your eyes during this movie or were to animate this movie, it really would have come off well. It has a Disney-type feel to the script. It's a little dark, but a Disney-type feel to the script. But a guy like Armie Hammer is almost better as a voice actor in this movie as opposed to, you know, the role he played, in my opinion. I don't know whether Stephen differs a bit there, but...
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think with Armie Hammer being this film, I mean, I think you're right. There's a neat vocal quality he brings to it. And he kind of... I found him kind of wooden through most of it, but his voice fit the part. It was kind of like if you could just kind of got rid of the body and got someone else, it would have been fine. I guess what I found fascinating was that, you know, you go from a film like J. Edgar, where he's playing like the spurned lover of, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, and then he goes and plays Prince Charming. I think that's kind of a neat career jump as well, too.
Absolutely. I'd seen an interview, and anybody that's been to Empire Theaters, you know, they do the pre-show reels all the time. And there was an interview with Armie Hammer about the movie Mirror Mirror in the what's coming at the theaters type thing. And they really talked to him a lot about Julia Roberts and working with Julia Roberts. And he said she was the ultimate professional in her craft. She was unlike anyone else he had ever worked with. And, you know, that's saying a lot, having been in the movie J. Edgar as well.
Well, and I don't think we've really heard any of the horror stories of working with Julia Roberts. I mean, I think she's actually kind of is the person she kind of plays in a lot of ways as being very kind of down to earth and such. I mean, this is obviously a different role, very cartoonish on her part, but I think that worked for her in this film, and I think it actually made the film more interesting. The other character I was in there that was kind of had some fun stuff, and it was Nathan Lane. He actually had some pretty little fun roles. It wasn't as big a part as I would like to see Nathan Lane in, because, I mean, if you remember him from a number of years ago with The Birdcage, and he's so amazing in that movie. And, of course, he's mostly known as a Broadway actor, but he's pretty good in this movie. I wish he had more part. I wish they had done a little more with him. I guess we could also talk about the seven smaller characters in this movie who actually, in a lot of ways, they really made this movie.
Absolutely,
and they really enlivened it. And it's funny, a lot of people wouldn't know most of the actors who played these parts at all. But I remember the gentleman from The Station Agent and Game of Thrones, I think it is, which is, what's his name? Where was he?
We're frantically searching the internet.
Yeah, we're horrible people. We didn't get the name here. Peter Dinklage.
There we go.
Yeah, he was in it, I think, a little bit. And the people who played the Seven Dwarves, they were actually very entertaining. And I have to tell you, they actually probably kept my interest. Like, it's almost too bad we couldn't see more of them in the movie, too, because I think they kept my interest going. But they actually did have a pretty big part and such. And it was interesting to see how the relationship develops between them and Snow White. And I thought that was quite interesting.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you a question about Nathan Lane. Mm-hmm. And I know you're a very good person for knowing lines in movies and remembering lines in movies and lines that maybe stand out. I have a question about Nathan Lane. There's a point during the wedding near the end of the movie where he is with Snow White.
Yeah.
And he reaches over and he's talking to one of the chambermaids and he says, "I always cry at movies," or "I always cry at weddings."
Sorry. Yes.
And for some reason, that line really sticks out to me for Nathan Lane. Is there something else? Was that line in The Birdcage as well?
Or was it? I think you may be right, because I think, because the plot line in The Birdcage was that it was about a male couple whose son is getting married to this girl who happens to be the daughter of a high-class Republican. And I think there was, they talk a little bit about, I think there's a line when he's dressed up in drag as the grandmother, I think it is, that I think he says about crying at weddings and stuff like that. It's kind of a very common line for him. The other movie I remember him very clearly was a movie called Jeffrey, where he played this really interesting priest in a church. And who loves show tunes, and so he'd start doing show tunes in front of all the people in the church. It was quite funny, actually. He's very good. I wish they'd given him more in this movie, though.
Yeah, and like I say, for some reason, the moment I seen that line, I'm like, I jotted a mental note down, and I said, I gotta ask Stephen about that one, because for some reason that line stuck out as, you know, I remember it, and I'm sure it's from The Birdcage. There again, let's look kind of shifting gears a bit. How about writing? What were your thoughts on the script?
I mean, I think it was interesting. I mean, I think it's always hard to write a role like Prince Charming. There's not a lot of edge to Prince Charming. There's not a lot to him. I mean, I would put this in the movie in the vein of some, like, an Ella Enchanted, or you may even say Ever After, though I think Ever After is a lot more serious of a movie than this ever pretends to be at any point. I mean, it's a good script to some degree, but it's not a great script. It's got some great moments in it, but I wouldn't say that there's anything that really stood out stellar. I think, you know, when they wrote this movie, they were writing this for Julia Roberts to do, and it's obvious that she has almost every single one of the best lines in this movie, with the exception of the dwarves, which I think they just make every moment count with their stuff. But it's an okay script. I think there could be a little bit more depth to some of these characters to get a real understanding of where they come from and such.
Right. You talk about scripts and stuff that stands out. I'm always a big fan of humor. Comedies are where I like to watch movies the most. And I love the scene where Prince Charming and the dwarfs are trying to break out of the underground lair, so to speak.
Yeah, and they have the key behind them, right? Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah. No, his relationship with them is very interesting, because they deal with this whole, like, discrimination of short people type thing. One of my favorite scenes was the scene where Snow White steals or takes the gold that they stole from the evil queen, I guess, and takes it back into town, and they follow her, and then she just turns it right back and says how great they are and everything. It was a really great scene. They're all like kind of like lost and confused. It was a very cute scene, actually. They did a great job with the relationship between Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. They did a really great job in making that work, and making her not just this kind of flimsy kind of little character who doesn't know what to do or anything. She handles her own out there type thing. She may not be the swords person that, you know, that the prince is type thing, but she handles her own out there, and I think that's quite fascinating. And they made her a lot more, I guess, proactive in how she deals with all the issues going on in, I guess, the kingdom they're in.
What do you think of these sort of modern adaptations or them taking a story that has gone through generations of people, you know, learning that story and knowing that story in and out? And we've talked a little bit about this in past podcasts. How far can you deviate from the original story?
Well, I mean, this is the big thing. Exactly, what is the original story of Snow White? Like a lot, I don't think a lot of people would actually even know what the original story was, type thing. I mean, I think we live in such a Disney-fied generation or world right now, where we take these stories of, like, you know, Cinderella and Snow White and Sleeping Beauty, and we think they're the story that Snow White or that Disney tells us, and we realize later that the original version had almost nothing to do with, like, these stories and everything. I mean, they took some liberty. I mean, a lot of this movie, you could see the Disney aspect in it, but I think they actually did deviate quite far from the Disney story. I think they really, you know, definitely making Snow White a more proactive character. Definitely, the dwarves, especially, they gave them quite a different role than what you saw in the Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs of the Disney version. I think they did a good job of just trying to make it their own movie. I mean, still, I would like a little bit stronger script, but they did try to make it their own movie and not make it too much like that. And of course, there's the next Snow White movie coming out in like a month. Called is it Snow White and the Huntsman? I think it is, or. And it's going to be a completely different take again, too. And it's very warrior-ish almost type thing. I know it's got Kristen Stewart. Charlize Theron is the queen. Okay. Kristen Stewart's playing Snow White. And it's a very much more, even more army, war-like feel to it as well, too. I've seen from the trailers.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like you say, those original stories are so different from the Disney ones we're used to seeing growing up. You know, it was almost kind of foreshadowing in a way that the Grimm's fairy tales, you know, one of the biggest characters to, mm-hmm. or one of the biggest writers of those fairy tales is a man named Grimm.
Yes, right? Exactly. You know,
like, they're very dark.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I remember hearing when they had made The Little Mermaid a number of years ago, and it's like they made this completely happy ending. And it's like she gets turned to salt at the story. Like, it tells you a lot about how children grow up and how they've changed growing up to what we have now, and how we really try to make everything into a happy ending for kids when they're like, you know, it's like they can't handle these really sad endings.
Right.
But then I think about, you know, movies that where they weren't based on a lot of other books, and I'm not too sure if it was based on a book. And then think of The Fox and the Hound a few years that was back in like 1982, I think it was, and that it was a sad ending. Like, there's no, it's not a happy ending. Like, that they realize they can't be friends together. Like, it's like, it's actually a pretty sad ending. And I remember that I felt closer to that story more than a lot of other Disney ones because it made sense. I mean, it didn't have to, I mean, it's not like you can't have happy endings, but it made sense on how it ended. I mean, you know, they had to struggle to get to any kind of common ground. So,
right. And then It is a bit of a play there to have that, you know. It sells tickets.
Yeah, no,
it
totally
sells tickets for it to be a happy ending, and you know, Snow White being one of the older ones, very, very dark story.
Very much so. I was remarking, we were looking at the movie poster a little bit of this, and I that's one part of this movie I really enjoyed was how they introduced the apple at the very end, yeah. And how Snow White just kind of goes, okay, you're busted. I know exactly who you are. I like that little change up at the end and everything that made it all kind of come. I don't want to give it away completely type thing, but it was a really cute ending of how they got the end of Julia Roberts' character of this story.
Right, right, absolutely. Let's shift gears again then a bit. We're about a third of the way, or a little over a third of the way in here. Looking at the cinematography. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a movie that as far as its visual appeal, I think really stands out.
It really does. The one interesting thing was that a lot of the movie didn't feel like it was a real place at all. I found it actually felt like, I mean, most of it felt like sets. I actually would love to know if they actually did make all this on sets, because most of it felt like it was on sets, especially the scenes in the woods.
Right.
And the scene in the town corner. But it was really there were some really great visuals for the special effects, like the magic mirror and a lot of the stuff that the queen uses
the
for
beast.
Spells. The beast. The beast is actually quite interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that was quite a unique way of going about showing that character. And I'm not sure if that character actually ever really – did that exist in the original stories? I don't think it did.
Yeah.
It was quite a neat little – how they brought that character in and how they kind of – how they detailed the graphics on that character. It almost was like it's almost like How to Train Your Dragon. It was actually almost like one of those dragons almost. I thought that was kind of cool actually.
I was thinking when I seen it and when it finally slows down in the forest scene, and like I say, they were giving a bit away again, but when it finally slows down in the forest scene, it reminded me of the Neverending Story.
Oh, yeah.
Like that kind of dragon from there, and it even had the same sort of body movement and especially when they get the close-up of the face and look. And you can tell, you know, that she's starting to make a connection there. When it doesn't kill her, it just sort of lingers there. You know, and obviously Snow White survives because we talked about her Bollywood dancing.
If she Bollywood danced at the end, that means she lives. Because that would really make a bad ending to the show if she doesn't dance and then dies. That would be really bad, actually. That's how we would make a really bad Snow White movie, probably.
Yeah.
No, I think this was great about this movie. Yeah, are these great, beautiful sets. Actually, the one I really liked also was how they designed the castle. In regards to the distance, I really liked how it looked, like the distance from it from the mainland and all that sort of thing. And
hanging
the disconnect.
On the cliff.
Almost just hanging there.
Yeah.
And I really liked the sets they used for the castle itself. They were quite beautiful, actually, to see it. I really enjoyed the very beginning when they're – I thought they were doing a chess game, and you realize they're doing Battleship.
Right, yeah.
However, I was so disappointed when I did not hear the line, "You sunk my battleship." Yeah. I really wanted that line, and they
well,
didn't
get
it.
Well, you may be able to hear that this summer at the theater.
Oh, I know I'm going to hear that line, and I'm going to dread that movie. But it was not on our summer movie pick last week.
Yeah. It was a movie that kind of reminded me a little bit of, and very much a darker movie, but kind of reminded me a little bit as far as cinematography of Pan's Labyrinth.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a good point, actually.
You know, that it had that sort of, even the filters they're using to shoot the film or whatever, had a very kind of mystic look the whole time, like as if you had dreamed this whole state of affairs. Like,
well, I think it's because it's all told in retrospect also by the queen as well, too. Most of it's still told in retrospect. It had a kind of a very almost storybook quality to it. Like, that was kind of cool about it type thing. And I think they did that on purpose because I think when they realized that other project was also coming out at the same time, they're not going to look the same. Like, even you see the trailers, they don't look anything the same. So,
what did you think of Julia Roberts, or I guess the queen's character, and how they played the mirror?
That was very cool how it ended. I mean, I hate giving away people things that, you know, Julia Roberts is talking to Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of cool. It kind of reminds you of those movies when you get people playing their twins and they talk to each other in the same scene. But what was interesting was, the fact that it was a female playing the person in the mirror, because it's almost always been a man.
Right.
I kind of thought about that. I thought that was really great to have the actual reflection, but not the reflection of what she wants to be. Versus what she really is.
Right.
And I think that was kind of very well done. I mean, I enjoyed Julia Roberts in this. I think she had such a great time making this. There was such a fun about what she was doing. And I mean, I don't think she took it, like, really seriously. I mean, I think, you know, if she's going to take – like, this isn't going to be the movie where she gets nominated for an Oscar type thing. But she had fun. And I think that's kind of a great thing about this this character. And I think she created a character that you could really connect to.
What about fairly new looking at Lily Collins' work in it?
Well, you know, there's a joke about her eyebrows I heard about, and how they just seem to, these eyebrows just seem to stand out on a screen or something. I mean, I actually thought she did a great job, and again, I think I want to stress that I think she did a great job when it came to the relationship between her and the dwarves. I'm not sure if I really quite got the Prince Charming relationship as great, but I think it's because Prince Charming's character just didn't have enough to it. Like, I just didn't feel he had enough character, where I felt like her relationship with the Seven Dwarves was very standing out. Like, and it really, you saw the growth of their relationship, where you didn't get to really see the growth that much with the prince. I find you got little snippets where you actually saw her with the dwarves for quite extended periods of time.
Right.
And she's a good actress. I mean, she did a fine job with this. I mean, it's not an Academy Award winning, you know, performances we're going through this movie. It's fun performances. Again, it's kind of equivalent to Anne Hathaway and Ella Enchanted. I think it's in that realm, and I think that's just fine. It was kind of cool to learn that she's Phil Collins' daughter. I think that's hilarious, actually.
Yeah.
Considering he does all the scores, all these scores for Disney films, I think that's rather funny, actually.
Yeah. And she doesn't have a massive body of work. You know, IMDb saying 9 titles that she's been an actress with. But it's kind of neat to look. She's played in movies with Sandra Bullock and Julia Roberts in the past 3 years, because she was in The Blind Side.
Yeah, she was. But then she was in Abduction. That there's a classic film. There was a classic film. Her and Taylor Lautner. My God, yeah. It's just the pillar of acting right there. And then there's Priest. That's even better. Well, you know, you take your movies.
Yeah, you take your movies.
But she's got a pretty busy schedule up ahead here. She's got like 4 movies coming on the next little bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, it looks like she's got The English Teacher, Writers, Rosaline. I would bet is the pronunciation on that. And The Mortal Instruments in 2013. But yeah, kind of cool to say that, you know, she was in the span of 3 years as a young actress in a movie with Sandra Bullock and Julia Roberts.
Well, it's interesting, those two actresses, because they're often compared to each other so often. I think Sandra Bullock and Julia Roberts, they've kind of followed that same career. They start off with really comedic roles, then they kind of moved into more dramatic roles, and they're the kind of people you cheer for. So, you know, if Lily Collins can get anywhere close to those two, she'll have a good career for a long time, actually. They're the actors you cheer on, you know, no matter what happens to them. You know?
They kind of fall into pet projects after a while, where they basically, on their name alone, can get studios to push a movie.
Oh, yeah, totally. And we're just talking about Harper Lee. I guess I don't know why we got talking. We saw a documentary on, and that Sandra Bullock played Harper Lee in Infamous a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, so yeah, she's kind of those actresses you'd like to see challenge herself a little bit more too. So
yeah, absolutely. We're gonna take a look real quickly at what else is going on in the box office this week in Brandon here at the Empire Theaters. I'll take a quick rundown, and we'll maybe get Stephen. We'll look at a couple of them here real quick. We're looking at The Hunger Games, American Reunion, The Three Stooges, The Cabin in the Woods, Mirror, Mirror, as we're talking about tonight. 21 Jump Street continues in the theaters in Brandon. Wrath of the Titans 3D as well. Titanic 3D is in the theaters once again. The Lorax remains, and you can check back on the previous episodes we've talked about The Lorax. And Wrath of the Titans takes up another screen in the standard def version. So we've dodged this up till now. And I think we can't dodge it any longer.
What are we not dodging?
Titanic 3D.
Oh, my. Well, you know, I've actually heard really great things about this version and how the 3D really brings it out. Actually, the funniest thing I saw this past week, there was a great clip on YouTube where it's called Titanic Super 3D, and it says about how the edits in this movie were they're inspired by modern day directors, and the one was Michael Bay, and it was hilarious because everything had an explosion with it.
Oh, okay.
It was really great, like a chair falls on the ground, explosion, you know, type thing. The people would fall off the boat, and every time they hit the water, explosion. It was hilarious. It's not doing that great at the box office. It didn't really do great the first week. I think they seriously thought it was going to be this monumental thing to see in 3D, and it didn't really do it. It kind of ended in between Beauty and the Beast and Lion King, roughly, in the 3D category of re-releases.
Okay.
I mean, Hunger Games is still going strong at the box office, so it's kind of the movie to beat still right now.
Right. American Reunion, we talked about a couple of weeks back. You know what you're getting with that one, I'm sure. My wife and I are going to go take a look at it just to kind of wrap up that franchise in my mind. The Three Stooges, that's an interesting one.
Yes. So it was quite funny. It started to go number one at the box office this week. Hunger Games then went past it again, unfortunately. But I was talking to someone about this film, and I said this has been the movie that got recast like 4 times over. It started off with like really A-list actors, and it was supposed to be like Jim Carrey and oh, I can't remember all the people who were involved in it. It was like Will Ferrell, like, at one point. And then all of a sudden, it just got graded down to like B actors and then down to C actors. Because now it's like Will Sasso.
Yeah, and French and Stewart, I think.
Like, it's like, it's the movie that you go, really?
Yeah.
Like, really? You should have given up after you lost when you got down to B actors. But no, let's go down to C, like people who haven't had a career.
Yeah. We're looking. It is a Farrelly Brothers movie.
Sean Hayes.
Sean Hayes, Will Sasso.
Jennifer Hudson, isn't this? Oh, my. Jane Lynch.
And I guess it wasn't Fresh French Stewart. It is Chris. What do we want to go with that? Dimitopoulos.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to try.
Yeah, we're not going to try that.
Chris D. will call him. There we go.
If any consolation, this movie will probably disappear in a few weeks and you won't remember his name anyway. So this just by sheer chance. It's not one that's going to stick around. I think right now we're kind of going through a little dry period. The one to watch out for, actually, I've heard really great reviews on The Cabin in the Woods. And it stars, I think it's the gentleman who plays Thor.
Okay.
In the Avengers and Thor, of course, as well, too.
Right.
I think he's in Cabin in the Woods as well, too. So
yeah, looks like it's got 4 out of 5 stars so far from the reviewers. So
I'm not a big horror film person myself, but I've heard like pretty good things about it. And it's got some interesting cast members, I think, too.
They do have to rewrite their tagline, though. From a sheer writing standpoint, this is terrible. A group of 5 college kids are tricked into spending a weekend at a mysterious cabin in the woods. Like,
That describes like 18 million movies, probably.
18 million movies. And I don't know anybody that's at a college level that gets tricked into spending a weekend at a mysterious cabin. Like, just don't go, folks.
Catherine Zeta-Jones got tricked into coming to a haunted mansion on a hill. Okay.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. There's a tagline. There was a movie that came out this past year called Tucker and Dale.
Okay.
And it started Tyler Labine, who I love as an actor. He's a lot of fun. And it was about these two hillbillies who help this one college student. Now their other friends think these guys are like serial killers, and they slowly get knocked off.
Okay.
It's because they keep killing themselves. But everyone thinks it's these two hillbillies who are doing it, but they keep killing themselves. It's quite funny. I've watched about half the movie. It's quite funny, actually. So if you get a chance, I can't remember the exact movie title of it. I know it's Tucker and Dale, but yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll move into Steven's going to tell us a little story about the Big Apple. He was in New York City last week checking out a bunch of shows. And he's just going to tell us sort of what he saw and what he thought was great and what it's like to be in the center of entertainment in the world.
New York City is it's an amazing place. I recommend anyone taking a chance just going for like 4 or 5 days and it's just going out and seeing these shows. I saw 5 shows over 4 days, and I saw some like quite different things. I went and saw The Gershwin's Porgy and Bess. With Autumn McDonald, who, if a lot of Toronto people know her more, I guess. She was in the original cast of Ragtime. She's the youngest person, the only person under 30 to have 4 Tonys to her credit. So she's good. She was on Private Practice for a number of years, but she's amazing in this show. But the thing is, the whole show is just filled with amazing singers. It's quite a pared-down script and songs and such, but it's a beautiful show. I also went and saw it's considered Tennessee Williams' last play he ever wrote. It didn't go very well. It's called In Masks, Outrageous and Austere, and it was an interesting concept. They really tried to modernize the script a little bit. I saw it on a preview, and unfortunately a lot of the actors one actor in particular, Shirley Knight, who's a quite classic actress, she was just not having a good night and called lines like 15 times during the show.
No. Yeah.
But I mean, it's going to be interesting. I'm hoping that in later runs it'll do well. I also saw Once the Musical.
Okay.
And I think I used it as a video pick a few weeks ago, actually,
right.
Talking about the movie. And it's a good musical. I wanted more out of it. I was hope that one of the big problems is it's a too big of a venue. It's such a small movie and it's such a small story and it's this really big theater. But it had some really cool things happen. Like for instance, like when you enter the show, if you got there early, you could hear all the musicians playing on stage. You could go on stage and listen to them and everything. It was really cool. If you want a drink, they had a bar on stage as well, too. Oh. During the intermissions, you could go check it out. The music is beautiful in this movie. I mean, the music in the movie, it's all very good, but it's very good in this movie and this musical as well, too. It's a good show. I wish it were, I'd seen it in a smaller venue. I think that would have made a big, big difference. I also saw a friend of mine, a wonderful gentleman named Larry Konofsky. We've become friends over the past a couple of years, and I saw a premiere of his play, and it was called Your Boyfriend May Be Imaginary. And okay. It's about this woman's quest to find her boyfriend in the city, and she's trying to convince everyone that this boyfriend exists, and no one believes her type thing. But it was a wonderful play, very funny, very sad, very... You find yourself really thinking about a lot of things in regards to your relationships and the kind of what relationships really mean. A beautiful play. I wanted to make sure I spot off to him because he wrote a wonderful play and good friend too. And the last thing I saw, which actually kind of leads me into my video pick of the week. Yes, yes. I went and saw Newsies, the musical. And so I'll talk about the musical a little bit. It was phenomenal. Like, it was probably one of the best dancing shows I have seen in years. Like, these kids in this show are just phenomenal. Like, you watch these kids, they're doing flips in the air, they do tap, they do modern, they do everything possible on stage they could do. Beautiful set design. They had these kind of structures to give the stairs of the back of a building. And okay. and they were chase sequences through these things. It was just amazing. Wonderful actors, wonderful songs, the whole work. It was just a beautiful show. And it was based off a movie that's my video pick of the week, which was a complete failure of a movie, unfortunately, when it came out. The music was all done by Alan Menken. And I believe the direction was done by... the guy who did High School Musical and those ones. I thought he directed the movie too.
Okay.
I was wrong. What's great about this movie, the story of Newsies is the story of the newspaper strike, of the kids' newspaper strike in the early 1900s, when they realize that they're going to be overcharged for getting the papers and such. And these kids are paying like 50 cents for like 100 papers. Like, you know, and they get charged 60 cents. And you think, oh my God, that's not really that bad. But in that day and age, it was. And a lot of these kids are orphans and such. And so the Newsies decide to go on strike and take on Pulitzer and all the big newspaper characters. It's a beautiful movie. It's one of those movies that is a wonderful gem that, you know, never got really appreciated in its day. Again, it was done by – the music was all done by Alan Menken, who did all the classic Disney films like Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin. And they decided to make a live-action musical, and it didn't do very well. It had one amazing cast. It had Christian Bale singing and dancing, and he's really very good. Anne Margaret, Robert Duvall is in it.
Okay.
I can't remember the – Max Casella, who used to be the best friend of Doogie Howser.
Oh, okay.
He's in it too as well too. It's a very fun movie. It's one of those movies that you can show your kids. It's not too serious, not too, but it's got some beautiful songs. There's a song that Christian Bale sings called Santa Fe, which has just become like an anthem for some people. It's a beautiful song about longing for a place and not needing family and not needing all those things that, you know, if you get to this certain place, those things won't matter.
Right.
And obviously his mind changes as the story goes on. But a beautiful movie. It's, again, a Disney film that is kind of getting some newfound respect. I can tell you from seeing the musical that this movie is going to just explode on rental charts again. Because, honestly, that was the only show I went to that was completely sold out on Broadway. And it's at the playing of the Niederlander, which was where Rent played for like 15 years.
Right.
But it was absolutely packed. And so people, I think, are starting to reappreciate this movie. A little bit and really take it back in and really give it a shot again. I actually saw it on the big screen again a few months ago, and it still had that magic. You know, it had a wonderful magic about it. And again, the dancing, again, is just out of this world. But yeah. So that's my video pick of the week, Newsies. Yes.
Excellent. And I took the choice to forego my video pick of the week to send a shout out to Melissa Losman and Neelan High School, who just finished producing and putting on the show to rave reviews, Urine Town.
I heard great things. I was reading online. I've heard great things about this show, and I've heard great things about this production as well, too.
So. Yeah, yeah. If you want to check out whatsupwestman.ca, Matt's got a bunch of photos on there. I did an interview with Melissa. Great show. And they had rave reviews. You followed on Facebook, that type of thing. People were loving what they do. And it was great because a dollar from every ticket that they sold went to... Through a corporation to help, or a nonprofit organization, sorry, to help fund washroom facilities, bathroom facilities for third world countries. So
well, amazing. The theme of the story, of course, being the corruption of water.
The corruption of water. Yes. Well, absolutely.
And one another great thing about this musical, and it's kind of this great age of musicals that we're seeing either, and it's the off-Broadway musical as being a vital. Like show that's going on, because Urinetown never hit Broadway, never once hit it. It only got an off Broadway, but there's a lot of great shows that off Broadway, and I can tell you from being in New York that there's just amazing shows to see, and then you don't have to pay the big dollars on for Broadway. You can go off Broadway and see them. And Urinetown was an example of one show that you could possibly see. I mean, yeah, if you ever get a chance, it's discovered like off Broadway musicals like Urinetown, who don't get a chance to get the big, I guess, crowds that the other shows do. Yeah,
absolutely. Yes, like I say, once again, a shout out to them. And as well, coming up this coming week, we're looking at Guys and Dolls. Oh. Seven Ages Productions is putting on Guys and Dolls. George Bury and the crew over my my old alma mater, you might say, as far as theater's concerned. I was with Seven Ages for a long time and still remain part of the Seven Ages family. So I wish them the best. And you never say good luck in the theater. So I hope they break a leg. And
maybe we can talk about the film Guys and Dolls as one of our video picks next week.
There we go.
There. That means, hey, you know, any movie where Marlon Brando sings and dances, yeah. you can't go wrong there. I just actually picked up a copy of. They just re-released Streetcar Named Desire with Marlon Brando on Blu-ray, and they've got the remastered revised version, the original version that was supposed to come in theaters before the code cut off all the indecent stuff.
So, oh, excellent.
Yeah, so you got to check that out.
Excellent. That'll be worth checking out. So we looked at Newsies being the pick of the week, and we were looking at Mirror Mirror this week. Once again, our podcasts are always available on iTunes by searching What's Up Westman. As well, you can check them out weekly on whatsupwestman.ca. Under the podcast tab, we actually have all ours in archive as well. So they are living in multiple places over the air and on the internet as well. Once again, thanks so much to Jill over at CJ106.5 for allowing us to flex our vocal tones on the radio here. And thank you for Stephen traveling all the way to Brandon, Manitoba to join me in person as opposed to a talking speaker in my home studio.
Yes, so. Exactly. Yeah, no, not Skyping this week, I tell you.
Absolutely. Well, thank you once again so much for joining us. Hope you get out to the theater or get out to the Empire Theater to check out some movies or live theater at the WMCA or the Evans Theater here in Brandon. Thanks again. We'll talk to you again real soon.